Welcome to episode 65 of the Sports Geek Podcast. On this week's podcast, I catch up with Ted Johnson from the Minnesota Timberwolves to talk about rebuilding, both on and off the court. And why am I so sore today? I'll tell you about my adventures at Amy Park.
Welcome to the Sports Geek Podcast, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals.
And now, here's your host, who likes Pinterest but isn't planning a wedding, Sean Callanan.
Thanks, DJ Joel. My name is Sean Callanan, and you are listening to the Sports Geek Podcast. Thank you for listening. If you're a first-time listener, and thank you very much if you're listening and you're a return listener and you have downloaded, hit play on this episode. As I've say on a recent podcast, if you are listening, let me know. Let me know that you are listening. Send me a tweet to at Sean Callanan, at SEANCALLANAN. Or at Sports Geek is where you can find us on Twitter. Send me a tweet. Tell me where you're listening to. Tell me what platform you are listening to the podcast on. It's on SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, Audio Boom, the podcast app. It's in multiple places. I'm just really interested in finding out where you're listening to it from. Obviously, I know the stats. I see that iTunes is far away the leader, but I am seeing more and more people starting to use SoundCloud, and the fact that Twitter now have introduced their audio card, I expect SoundCloud to get another big bump and jump in listeners. It won't be just the podcast choice for people who are on Android. For me, I'm still a fan of the Pocket Casts app. If you're looking for a new podcasting app, I'm a big fan of that one. On this week's episode, I catch up with a good mate of mine, Ted Johnson, who I spoke with at a conference back in 2010, and then I did some work with Ted and the team at the Minnesota Timberwolves around the NBA draft in 2011, and we talk about that and what they're doing now after a really big summer for the Timberwolves with the Kevin Love trade. But they're also talking about what they're doing to upgrade their facilities and some of the things he's done in that space in just the political games you have to play to get a new stadium and get new facilities built in pro sports in the US. I am very sore this morning. Last night, I was lucky enough to play a game of football at Amy Park, or the Melbourne Rectangular Stadium, as it will be known, for the Asian Cup. The Asian Cup will be Australia's will be the biggest football tournament that Australia's ever seen. I actually been working with the guys at the Asian Cup for the last 12 months or so and helping them sell tickets. There's a lot of tickets to be sold. So if you are in Australia and you're in Melbourne, Sydney, or Brisbane or Newcastle, and there's a few games in Canberra as well, January 9 to January 31, the Asian Cup is on. So I was lucky enough to be invited to have a bit of a scratch match, play a game of football with some of the people from the media and against and with a couple of former Socceroo legends, Alan Davidson, Craig Moore, and Mark Bosnich, who people would know from the TV. He's on Fox Sports and very much a larger-than-life personality on the TV and definitely on the pitch. Unfortunately, we did not go well, the red team. And I've walked away. It was my first game of actually playing anything since I tore my Achilles. It's nearly 18 months ago now. So I was a little bit worried. People didn't want me to get injured, but I came through unscathed. Other than a rather badly dislocated little finger when I was a goalkeeper for the second half. So that pretty much ends my footballing career. One game. Play on Amy Park, and that'll do it for me. That's enough for this. One more thing before I get into the interview with Ted Johnson. Thanks for the response for the NFL lookbook. It's as it says in the tagline, it's a handy PDF guide. It's got every single NFL team's website, the front page. See what they look like. Get inspired. See what they're doing. And you can download it at sportsgeekhq.com/lookbook. Had a really good response. It's just a good guide to see what the different teams are doing. And what we're going to be doing is rolling out a different one probably every 2 to 3 weeks. Everyone who's going to be on the Sports Geek News email list, you'll get it. You'll get it for free every time we ship one out. If you're not, please sign up. You can sign up with Lookbook and you get on the Sports Geek email news list. So we're going to be cycling through doing about one every 2 weeks or so for all different leagues around the world. And as people sort of said coming through, that the sites do change around big events. So thanks to Paul from the Jets who said to do it again around the playoffs. And that's very much our intention, to do a couple for each league, especially around the big events. So if you're into sports and digital and how websites are designed and what other teams are doing, which I hope you are, because that's why you're listening to this podcast. You can download that. It is a big file. It's 122 megabytes. So make sure you click, right mouse, save as, so you can see the progress, because it does take a little while to do it. But had a lot of downloads of it in the last week, and expect more to come out as more leagues are rolling. And we're going to do most of them while the leagues are in season, so you get that feel for what they're doing in the game. That's it for now. There'll be more after my interview with Ted Johnson, but now here's the interview. Ted Johnson, Chief Marketing Officer for the Minnesota Timberwolves, on the Sports Geek Podcast. Very happy to welcome a good mate of mine who I've worked with before and spoken with at conferences, Ted Johnson, the Senior Vice President and Chief Marketing Officer at the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Minnesota Lynx. Welcome to the Sports Geek Podcast.
Hey, good morning to you. And by the way, Sean, congratulations. I understand that you had the big dog, Mr. Mark Cuban, on. And congratulations on landing that interview.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you very much. As I've sort of said to a lot of people who have given me feedback, I'm very thankful for people like yourself and anyone who supported me on starting Sports Geek, because if I didn't make the connections with people like yourself and people in the US and different leagues, then I wasn't able to show Mark Cuban the guest list that I've had on for the podcast that pretty much validated for him to say, yes, I'll come on. So thank you very much for being a friend of mine, and I'm very happy to have you on the podcast. You've been on my list for a while, and we just haven't been able to connect because you're just too damn busy. What's been your focus lately? Tell me about the new training center that you've been working on with the Timberwolves.
Yeah, well, we're a franchise kind of rebuilding itself on a number of different fronts. And as you mentioned, we have both the Timberwolves in the NBA and the Lynx in the WNBA. And we have exciting things going on with both of those teams. But then we also have two facility projects. And the one that will come online the soonest is this training center that we're building. And it's really going to be something incredibly unique and very different than any other training center that we have in the NBA. We're actually doing a training center that includes a training center for the Wolves, a training center for the Lynx. We're also going to move all of our business operations over there. And then maybe probably the most unique aspect is that we've partnered up with the Mayo Clinic. I should say the world famous Mayo Clinic, which is headquartered right here in Minnesota. And they're building out a state-of-the-art sports medicine center within the facility itself. And that training center will be available for, the average person on the street that wants to visit the Mayo Clinic Sports Medicine Center. But more importantly, they're going to be servicing all of our athletes as well. So it's an incredibly unique project, and we're pretty excited. We have a ways to go on it, but we're making progress.
And I guess the advantage of having everybody in that one facility is pretty advantageous, especially for the team admin, not having to be going from one venue to another venue and that kind of thing, to be able to be able to capture that content or see the players a bit more often than having the admin staff and I guess the basketball operations or the training facility at a different location.
No, you're spot on, and I think the average fan doesn't think about, anything beyond sort of the content that they're seeing and they're watching. But for those of us in the business of securing the content and simply even in the operations of a team, you can't overstate how important that is. You and I, we've talked to colleagues, other folks in my position in the NBA where, you sometimes have people that they have their business offices in one location. They may be a half hour away from the team's training center, and that may be yet another half hour away from the arena in which they play. And so the amount of team that, particularly the public relations department or the broadcast department or the digital department, you know, the amount of time that they spend on the road just traveling from facility to facility, it's just incredibly inefficient. So to have a facility right there, we're all in one place, and our PR department can literally look out a window down onto the training center and know when the players are available. Or, you know, we're going to build a broadcast studio. Primarily for digital purposes, we're building a broadcast studio right on the training center court itself with big glass walls that will look right into the training center. It really is. It's going to give us an advantage that I think will make most of my colleagues envious from other teams around the league. So it's going to be pretty unique and pretty interesting.
Well, that was you answered my next question, which was about putting in some of the tech side of things from a digital point of view and the broadcast point of view of putting in those studios, because yeah, you go to stadiums that are getting refit or old stadiums and even ones that keep getting renewed, and you know, you go to Madison Square Garden and what used to be a broom closet is now a digital studio of some sort, whereas you have the ability to say, no, we don't want a broom closet, we want an actual fully fledged studio that's going to work from now.
Yeah, and I would say that, you know, it's not going to be as large as a full-fledged TV studio, but we certainly will beat the broom closet. But it, you know, and you know, it's if you're smart about it, you can really, with a decent footprint, you can really use that space pretty efficiently and create two or three different sets and different looks. But the fact that we're going to have one where the backdrop literally is looking into the practice court itself, I think should make some, you know, for some pretty compelling backdrops and just make the content come to life a little bit better. If you're on able to do a show and you literally have over your shoulder the guys practicing or the women practicing, we'll also be able to have access. We'll have access to the court itself. So if we get into content, you know, talking, breaking down the game or doing something like that, we'll be able to get on the floor as well. And so, yeah, we're able to do it the right way, right from the get-go. It's going to be a high-tech center. We're going to have, of course, the basketball department's going to have incredible high-tech technology in the training center itself that will be able to break down what all the players are doing on the court. But we're going to have the latest and greatest from the digital and the broadcast side as well to make sure we're capturing all that content. And, yeah, we're excited.
So the training, when is the new training center hopefully open? I know, you know, things can blow out, but when's the go date when you are able to move in?
Yeah, sure. So we're hoping to get in there in the spring. We really started the project back in February, and it's a remodel. It's located literally right next to our arena. It's right. As a matter of fact, Sean, when you were here, and we had Derek Williams. We went over to a little reception when Derek Williams was drafted. And it's literally in that building. So it's an existing building, so they're renovating it. And like any renovation, once you open up the walls, we encountered some problems. But we're back on track. We're building out pretty quickly. Our partner, the Mayo Clinic, actually just opened their sports medicine clinic last week, so they're up and running and open for business and able to support our team, and so we should be able to move in there next spring in time for the Lynx training camp in May, and that's really our timeline.
And so you're upgrading the training center, and then it's almost an arms race from a stadium point of view. What are you currently looking to do to keep your current arena up to date and upgraded and meeting fans' expectations?
Yeah, well, you're right. I mean, frankly, both of these projects are kind of part of the arms race. And, you know, we sort of got into this, our owner at one point about 4 years ago, you know, he's getting up there in age, and he had looked around at potentially selling the team and went out on the market and found a lot of potential buyers, but none of which would be willing and interested in keeping the team here. And he's really committed to Minnesota. And so he stepped back from that and took the team off the market. And he said, you know what, for this team to be sustainable, we have to do four things. And we need to do something on the basketball side with the Wolves and on the basketball side with the Lynx. But then the other two things that we need to have a sustainable program here in Minnesota and ensure the team stays here is to build a training center, state of the art, and then upgrade our arena. And before I leave the training center real quick, just to give you a sense, most other training centers now in the NBA, the new kind of modern era training centers, and there's been three or four that have been built recently, are in that 50,000 square foot sort of range for space. And that compares to right now, we use about 13,000 square feet for our current training center in the basement of our arena. The new ones are in that 50,000 square foot range. Our training center across the street with the Mayo Clinic is going to be 106,000 square feet. So that gives you a sense of the scale of the complex. And our practice facility is going to be a little bit more on par with some of the big university training centers that have been built here in the States over the last couple of years, in Oregon, West Virginia. Some of those college campus, college programs are building these very large complexes. And ours will be the first one really in the league modeled on that with a much, much bigger footprint. But just like that on the training center, there is an arms race, as you said, as well on the arena side. And so we have worked with the city here in the community. It was about a four-year process working with our local government to secure $100 million to renovate Target Center. And the team is supporting that as well. We're putting money into it. But, you know, we're going to try to do a lot of different things that other venues and other arenas have. You know, by now our building is the second oldest in the NBA without a major renovation. We were sort of built before the big renaissance of arena building kind of hit the States. And so we need all sorts of things, from clubs and hospitality for our best fans and clients. We need to improve the concourses for, you know, the average fan. We want to improve some of the food offerings. We're due for a little bit of an upgrade on the exterior of the building as well. Put more glass into the building. Right now we're a big concrete sort of pillbox. And so we have a lot of work to do on that as well. But, you know, those are the types of things that you need to do to have a modern arena that fans, you know, will come to and pay the ticket prices that support a NBA franchise.
One of the things, so I was sort of having backwards and forwards with you as you were going through this process. How much of the process was the working with local government to get that approval through? And you've got a background in politics and working in that space. How much did that help you in helping the Timberwolves through that process of getting the government approval and getting this project off the ground? Because really there would have been a lot of pitching involved to get this project up and running.
No, you're spot on. It, you know, it was one of those things a couple of 4 years ago that, you know, they came to me and they gave me a whole second job without a new title and without a pay increase. But it was specifically because of my background in politics. And I worked for an owner who also was in politics. He was a state senator here many years ago. And so, yeah, you know, the process over the 4 years was one of trying to build consensus at the state level as well as at the city level with different politicians and policymakers. And it was really a process of educating them as to the need. And, you know, we would talk to people about the arena, the kind of economic impact it drives. You know, Target Center creates $100 million in sort of economic benefit outside of its walls. So all the restaurants and bars really depend upon the 200 events that come through our arena every year. And the Timberwolves and Lynx are a big part of that. We have more than 2 million visitors to the arena. And so you start educating politicians about the importance of the arena and what it does and how it supports all these other businesses in the community. We talked a lot about the fact that our owner was, you know, as he's gotten up there in age and he's looking to find a new owner, someone that would commit to keeping it here in our community. These types of things are important for him to be able to find a buyer that will do that. And then, you know, the other sort of thing, though, the challenge that we had is while all of that education is good and you start to get policymakers understanding why you need to do it, you know, the challenge in our marketplace is that we've had a lot of new buildings in the last couple of years. So we're probably along with Denver, I think, we're the most competitive sports market. We're the 15th largest market in the United States, and yet we have all the major pro teams. We've got a WNBA team. We've got got a minor league baseball team. We've got a major Big Ten university that not only has men's football and basketball, but in Minnesota, the hockey program also draws like a major sport. And many of these different teams have all built facilities with government help over the last 10 years. And so that was kind of our challenge. It was educating them, even once they began to understand the challenge. The other problem we had to overcome was the fact that the public had been spending and investing in public facilities over the last 10 years, and there was a little bit of fatigue, but in the end, we were able to convince them that it was a wise investment. But my political background absolutely helped, as did my owner's background. We both actually come from the opposite party, so he was able to work on folks on his side of the aisle, and I was able to talk to folks on my side of the aisle with a certain amount of credibility, and that certainly helped the process.
And I mean, I guess that is, it's super critical to get the stadium right, because you've got to get your fans in there to continue that benefit. Because, when you're breaking down where the team's revenue comes from, it comes from, a big chunk comes from TV, and we'll talk about the new NBA deal. A big chunk comes from sponsorship, and then that other third comes from ticketing. So you've got to make sure that your stadium is at a point that your fans want to keep turning up to and keep attending.
And the interesting thing is, while we look around the league at other arenas, this is a space that actually within our league, we're not competitive with our other teams, right? Because if we do really well in our market, we're not taking anything away from, say, Cleveland. And so we look at other arenas and what they do, and we're all very open and very good at sharing. But people's local frame of reference is really about their own local buildings. Typically someone in Minneapolis isn't thinking about their trip to Cleveland and what that arena was like. Their frame of reference is they went to the Minnesota Vikings game at the new stadium, or they went to the Twins game at the new ballpark. And so even 10 years ago in Minneapolis, St. Paul, we call ourselves the Twin Cities. Even 10 years ago, there were only two sports facilities in town. There was the Metrodome and there was Target Center. And nowadays, instead of two buildings, there are nine buildings. So it means that you have to provide the amenities that fans are starting to get used to and that they're seeing in other venues. Their expectations change over time. And so, what used to be okay in Target Center isn't okay anymore if they're going to all these other venues and getting a different level of service or a different level of amenity. And that's, as you said, it's a big chunk of our revenue. It's how we support, the crazy payrolls that we have. Not my salary, but the payrolls of 15 other individuals down the hallway.
But it is about
let's just be competitive.
Yeah, it is about getting that mix right. The thing is that digital and social has opened up all teams to a national and even a global market. But then you've got to get that mix right where everything, and Mark Cuban pretty much said this when he was talking about games being broadcast into China and the potential for a game to be at like a Saturday morning. He goes, I don't want that because my fans who attend the game, who are from Dallas, they don't want a game then. They want a game at 7:30 on a Friday night or 7:30 on a Saturday night. And the local market and getting your local market marketing mix right so your fans in the region that can attend the games, like that's super critical. You've still got to make sure that that's right all the time.
Well, I think that is the interesting challenge of the NBA as we grow in international popularity is, if you look in your crystal ball, you can easily see that in a not too distant future, we may have, a significant, if not half or more of our revenues coming from sort of our global reach. And yet, the 30 teams that make up the NBA are still dependent upon those 30 marketplaces as the stage on which, the games occur. And, there wouldn't be nearly as much interest in that game being broadcast into China if they're being broadcast, a game that's going on in a court in the middle of an empty arena, because that's part of of sport is the emotion and how the audience can participate and the fans can change the outcome of the game. That's all part of the drama and what people love about sport. And so you're right. It's even as we maximize the ability to reach around the globe and bring our games around the globe, it's still dependent upon the actual game that's happening in Minneapolis, Minnesota, or Cleveland, Ohio, or wherever it is. And so you have to be able to create a great environment and a great atmosphere, which means taking care of your people that are there buying tickets to the game.
Yeah, I mean, it was only just a couple of days ago, NBA and Turner announced a new deal, 9 years, which is I don't know what that is in internet years. That's almost like 27 in internet years. 9 years is an exceptionally long, exceptionally long time.
I've never heard of it. I love the idea, though.
Well, the internet years and dog years are effectively the same thing. Like 9 years ago, like just try to think, and we could go back to the Wayback Machine, you know, go back and look at the Timberwolves website 9 years ago. Like it will almost be text-based. Like that's how far digital has come. So in 9 years, who knows, you know, things like Google Glass may go mainstream. It might, you know, we might have this easy heads-up display, all that. There's so many different, I guess, technologies that have probably not even been invented. You know, things like Apple Watch haven't even come out yet. So what's the fourth or fifth version of the Apple Watch going to be able to do that it can't do now? So yeah, so a 9-year deal,
at a
rumored $24 billion, mind you. I do see that pie, which again Oscar Ugaz showed at Seat this year, where it was TV. Ticketing and sponsorship, that's where sports gets its money, and digital was this little sliver that says once we start getting proper money for that, then it'll get a bigger seat at the table. Deals like this are starting to change that pie graph to making digital a bigger and bigger chunk. And like you said, it will be the global reach. It will be, you know, the Chinese and Indian markets as they dive into NBA. There's just so many people there. They will want to be subscribing, and there will be a bit of a race. We've already seen NBA teams tune some of their marketing to those markets, jumping on different platforms and trying to attract those fans. It's a real challenge, and you know it's open season on all those fans, because you don't have that geolocation. I must follow this team because they're my local team. The same as in Australia, we all get to pick our favourite NBA team because we're not tied to the local team. So it's a real advantage for any team that wants to push into those markets. That there's all those, it's green fields out there.
Well, and you say that, and I laugh because I do remember, you know, and I came here 12 years ago. I came to the league or to the team, and I remember that the league was still trying to enforce those geofencing concepts, because in the NBA we do have sort of territories, and they were built to protect particularly a lot of the teams on the East Coast that are very close to each other, and they wanted to make sure that, you know, the big New York team couldn't squeeze out the Philadelphia team. So we kind of have these sort of territories by which we can market in for tickets. And I remember when they were trying to apply those rules to the web, and a lot of us coming in that maybe had a little more experience with the digital side, just shaking our heads. And thankfully we've moved away. But, you know, I take a look at this TV deal is really, you know, not that dissimilar from the initial public offering of Facebook and some of these others. Everyone knows that there is value in this audience. No one's maybe quite figured out exactly, you know, how you monetize it, or I would even argue a lot of, you know, already we're monetizing those audiences. We maybe aren't drawing the direct ROI back to it, but we all know how important audience is, especially as the media landscape fragments.
Yep.
And it just shows that they understand the value as well, even if they can't tell you today exactly how it's going to be monetized, how they're going to do it. They just know in an increasingly fragmented media landscape that anything that's live programming or can be attached to the emotional sort of, power of a sports team is just that much more valuable in today's world. So It'll be interesting, but you're right. I mean, I love the Wayback Machine. It is incredible to think about and where this thing may go. But, you know, what we do know is that they've come to play in a big, big way, and they see the potential in it. So we'll see how it emerges.
Well, and that's always the challenge for a league with the rights. It's the, do you take the big bag of cash, or do you keep the rights and say that you can make, or you know, monetize and get that revenue back? And you know, that's the play that all leagues are now playing with. You know, we've got Major League Baseball, Advanced Media. They've gone down the route of, we're going to do it ourselves and we're going to monetize it, and they're doing a terrific job with all of their products. But sometimes the far easier one is to partner with a media partner that wants to amplify your footprint and give you the big bag of cash. It's a far easier option as long as you've got the right partner that can execute. And, you know, they're not called the worldwide leader. And TBS, you know, do a great job in that space. So I think it's going to be a win-win for the NBA.
Well, yeah, I think we're thinking the same, and you know, you were spot on. It depends. You need a partner that can execute, and you know, the NBA has grown its reputation, you know, for being one of the more aggressive leagues, particularly in the social space. But you know, we've had this decentralized model, and there's good and bad with it. You know, it tends to drive maybe more innovation when you have 30 teams all out experimenting in that space, driving innovation. You know, the challenge comes in when you want to scale, and the amount of investment that maybe is available to one local team. You know, a team like ours, for example, we wouldn't have nearly the budget that, say, a New York team would be able to invest into an innovative idea. So it's a push and pull, and I'm not quite sure what the better strategy is, but this seems to be a little bit of the hybrid model, which is you're going to keep some of this work decentralized and in the hands of the teams where they can innovate, but you're also bringing a very, very large partner to the table that if they execute right can bring a lot of resources and scale a really good idea very quickly.
Yeah, and then that is what, from a team point of view, you've got to look at how can you tell your story different to the league partners, the league itself, and then what you provide your fans, because you've got that inside access we talked about it before. You know when, you know, Ricky Rubio is hitting the training court and you can send your guys down there. The team is still going to have a really big advantage in sending out that content, and more of the teams are following the path of, we're our own media organisation and we want our fans to come first. And that's still one of the most valuable assets that teams have. Again, as long as they execute that right and get that story out correctly.
No, you're absolutely right, and we've talked about this over the years. That is, you know, the fundamental change in our organization was when we determined that we really were a media company and we had to act like it. And you see that with most other teams, and that is. That's one of our most valuable resources, is access to our players, because as we all know, you know, the game itself, while it is the focal point of what we do, you know, that's only half of the story. The other half is how you get there and the interactions and the stories of the players. And, you know, we just know from traffic that's what people want to see. You know, they can get the scores anywhere. And I think as we talk about our digital strategy from a team standpoint, you know, we have to be smart. We are a miniature media company, but we don't have the resources to, you know, be ESPN. So we have to sit down and think about, what is content? We can't beat CN or ESPN at being ESPN. The person that wants their scores, that wants their quick stats, that want the top headline stories, you know, they're going to get that from ESPN, and so we have to have differentiating content that gets people to come to our site, that goes beyond the scores and everything else, and thankfully we've got the access to the players to deliver that kind of content.
Well, speaking of content and storytelling, you've had a couple of big stories over the off season. For some reason, you've mentioned Cleveland, Ohio twice in our conversation so far, but it's been a really big changing of the guard and reformatting the team with Kevin Love leaving for Cleveland and a bit of a refresh for the Timberwolves getting in Andrew Wiggins.
Yeah, no, it's been a big summer. And, you know, when I said, you know, going back to that plan that we developed 4 years ago on the Wolf side, it was about how do we get this thing right. And at that time, we had David Kahn still as our president of basketball operations, and Glenn Taylor, our owner, had determined to give him a little more time. And failing being able to change that, decided to bring Flip Saunders back in as our president of basketball operations. Flip, after he had time to sort of assess the team a year ago, decided that, you know, he was going to step in and coach. Also did his own assessment of the team itself. And, you know, for a whole number of reasons, it became clear very quickly that we were going to have to build a team for the future without Kevin Love. And so then the challenge was, how do you maximize a player like Kevin Love? And, I think here locally, everyone was extremely happy with what Flip Saunders was able to do in putting together that deal and deliver the last two first overall picks, you know, and Anthony Bennett and Andrew Wiggins, as well as, you know, bringing in the 76ers to get Thaddeus Young. So, yeah, we're in a bit of a rebuild, and we've gone a little bit younger. But I think here locally, fans are really excited about the potential of this team. When they look down the road 4 to 5 years and they kind of look at a player like Andrew Wiggins and the potential he has, even compared to Kevin Love, most people are very excited about the deal and about the rebuild.
And recently, you know, just sort of show some of the excitement, you had a Dunks After Dark event. Do you want to tell us a little bit about how that went down and some of the fans' reactions to the event?
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, this is something that Flip Saunders, our head coach, had decided to bring to the team. And, you know, Flip had gone to the University of Minnesota back in the 70s and would always regale us with these stories of they were the first team in the United States, first college team, to have one of those sort of dramatic openings. They'd turn off the lights and they'd have spotlights going and some smoke going, and they would come out to Sweet Georgia Brown like the Harlem Globetrotters and do this crazy warm-up drill that would psych out the opponent's team. And so Flip is always really, he's a little bit of a showman. And so he said, you know, one of the great ways we could sort of kick this off was to steal a page from college basketball, who often do this Midnight Madness thing, and we'll do our own Midnight Madness. So on the day of media day, when the players reported for camp, we did our media day here in Minneapolis, and then we drove down to Mankato, which is a small college town, an hour and a half away from Minneapolis. That's where we do our training camp. And we filled their auditorium. They have a 5,000 person arena. And we told them that we would open up the doors at 11 o'clock, and we did. And about 5,000 people came streaming in. And at 12:01, the Minnesota Timberwolves started training camp and hit the floor at 12:01 and had just a great time. The Flip let the guys do a lot of freestyling, did some warm-ups, they did some scrimmages, and then we had a sort of a ad hoc dunk contest at the end of the night. But it was a lot like an NBA All-Star game. There wasn't a lot of defense being played. So there were a lot of alley-oops and dunks and a lot of oohs and ahs from the fans. And it really helped generate tremendous buzz, you know, not only locally with the 5,000, but, you know, we got some great national buzz and coverage on NBA TV, and it really got our fans excited for the start of the season.
Well, I'm really looking forward to seeing Ricky Rubio running the lanes and setting up guys like Wiggins and Bennett, because he'll just throw it up there and say, "Go get it, young fella." And it should be a fun team to watch. I always put the T-Wolves on my league pass, and one of the perks of being Sports Geek, I can just have the NBA playing on my desk while I'm working away. So I'll be keeping an eye on how it's going.
A great job.
Oh, exactly. It's all research. As long as the taxman knows I'm researching it from a digital point of view. So it's all part of it. I still tell people how I met Ricky Rubio at the 2011 draft when he was first signed, and you were taking him around and introducing him to everybody. And I don't think he understood anybody when you're introducing me.
everybody, but he understood every word I said because he'd been taught English by Australian Joe Ingles when they were playing at Barcelona. So for all the people that he could understand the Australian with the strange accent. And funnily enough, Joe Ingles has just recently signed with the LA Clippers to have another Australian in the NBA. So Ricky can say hello when they play the Clippers.
That's right. He had that foggy look on his face until he started talking to you, and then you could see the eyes dial in, and he suddenly got it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I won't do my Spanish accent. I end up sounding like Dr. Nick from The Simpsons, so I won't do that. I will have to make plans to actually come over and catch a Timberwolves game live at the Target Center to see this young lineup. So I'll have to put that in my diary to make my way over during the NBA season. I'm always coming over for seat, but it's always outside of the NBA season, and I feel like I need to catch some hoops in this coming season.
Sean, we need to get you back up here. Ideally, we bring you back in January because that's where Minnesota is at its best, with about 5 feet of snow on the ground and sub-zero temperatures. It's a true test if you're cut out to be a Minnesotan or not.
Oh, well, that's normally when I'm sending all of my friends like yourself and Todd, who's in Detroit, talking about how much snow. That's normally when I send you pictures of me in my shorts walking down at the beach, but... I might have to come to Minnesota in January just to prove that I've got what it takes.
There you go.
Thank you very much.
Well, we'll have you anytime. We'd love to have you back.
No worries. Well, thank you very much, Ted, for joining me, and we won't wait another couple of years to have another chat for the podcast.
All right. Well, sounds good, and hopefully, folks, tune us in this year. We're going to be interesting to watch.
Sign up for Sports Geek News at sportsgeekhq.com/signup now.
Thanks again to Ted Johnson from the Minnesota Timberwolves. You can follow him on Twitter, WolvesCMO. Good bloke, really smart bloke. Obviously coming from that political background and bringing it to sports, really advantageous in developing stadium proposals and new practice facilities. So actually looking forward to seeing how that practice facility looks next time I'm in Minnesota. And who knows, I might venture out there in January. So that wraps up this episode of the podcast. Don't forget, announced it an episode or two ago. Please send in your iTunes reviews and just flick me an email, sean@sportsgeekhq.com, or take a snapshot and tweet it to me. Really appreciate the reviews we've got for the podcast so far. You can simply go to sportsgeekhq.com/iTunes. They are part of my goals and the how many reviews I get and downloads and things like that. You can go and check out everything that all my goals. I call it my anything's possible list. It's not an impossible list. You go to seancallender.com/goals. And it's a few of those things there of what I'm trying to do with the podcast and just what I'm trying to do overall. Really pleased with how they're going, and again, a big thank you to the people who have supported helping me get to those goals. Social media posts of the week this week goes to, for the wrong reasons, the Atlanta Falcons for a badly drawn infographic promoting their trip to London that pointed where the planes were going, and unfortunately they did not land in London. The infographic pointed to Spain. So that one went viral. I think everyone would have seen it. I retweeted it. It's in the show notes. But good on the Atlanta Falcons for having a little bit of humor about it. When they did land in London, they took a picture of the tour guide and told everybody they arrived in the right place and that they are now brushing up on their geography. So yeah, the main thing is to have a little bit of fun with it. Everybody makes mistakes every now and again, but as long as you have a bit of humour about it, it's not that big of a deal. But I thought it was quite funny to see where the Falcons thought they were landing. But yeah, quite funny the way they reacted. So it wasn't too hard to move London to where they actually ended up being. A couple of other things. As I said before, the NFL lookbook is out. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/lookbook to grab it. And as I said earlier in the program, we're going to be doing leagues across the world and around the world. So please tell me which ones you want done next, which lookbook you want done next, for which league, you know, what's your fave. We really want to cover a whole breadth of leagues in the US, in Australia, in the UK, and just around the world, just to get a feel, because it's really good to see what everyone else is doing. Sounds of the game this week is going to be at the end of the show. I'm going to put it at the end of the show just to keep it fresh and keep you tuned in for the end. Did you like the little extra that I put on the end of episode 65 if you listen to the very, very end? This week's Sounds of the Game comes from Arsenal. I always like tuning into the Arsenal SoundCloud, hearing a good friend and former guest, Richard Clark, doing the commentary with Dan Roebuck. So it's Lucas Podolski getting the win. So have a listen to that for later on. Really good way of using SoundCloud for those goal highlights. And as Richard said on the episode when he was on Sports Geek Podcast, it was really a real effort to get into SoundCloud and see it as a social platform. And I think that's only going to go more and more gangbusters now that audio card is available in Twitter, as I said earlier. That clock is telling me to shut up, get out of the episode, let you guys go back on, get back on with your lives. This is episode 65. As with every episode, you can get the show notes at sportsgeekhq.com/65. Please, if you are listening for the first time, go back in the archive, listen to some of the episodes prior with guests from around the world. Very appreciative of all the guests. You can connect with all the guests on the Sports Geek Podcast guest page. There's all their LinkedIn and their Twitter handles there. So please connect with them. They're all smart, smart people. That's it from me. My name is Sean Callanan from sportsgeekhq.com. As I said earlier, you can send me an email, sean@sportsgeekhq.com, or send me a tweet @SeanCallanan or @SportsGeek. Until next week, keep your hashtags fresh and always spell check your infographics.
Check out which teams work with SportsGeek at sportsgeekhq.com/clients. Find all Sports Geek podcasts at sportsgeekhq.com/SGP. Send in your sounds of the game. Email Sean@sportsgeekhq.com.
Thanks for listening to the Sports Geek Podcast.
Into the final few seconds of the ninth battle, goal comes Chamberlain, edge of the area, tricks round one challenge, Nestor Sanchez brings it down, thumps it across goal, Podolski! It's 2-1! Lucas Podolski has won it for Arsenal! What a turnaround! They were heading for defeat, and now suddenly, Arsenal are winning in Belgium!
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.